Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I'm an SMB online, Fed Come Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just to remind how to join us, we have talk guests every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. When it comes to the streaming on Thursday night, what you can do is you can join us either on the Starfleet Universe Online Discord server. Just join the SFU On Call stream voice channel. And you can find an invite to the server on the sfuoncall.com website. Also, if you want to watch me, my beautiful face, live, you can go over to twitch.tv. That's twitch.tv/sfuoncall and join the chat over there. And, of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. If you follow me on the Twitters, you can follow my podcasting account is SFU On Call. If you want to follow my personal account, it's Paul France, PAULFRNZ. There's no T in that. Also, you can follow me on my business account, which is Franz Games, FRANZGAMES. Again, no T in that. And of course, Blue Sky. I got the SFU On Call .bsky.social account and my FranzGame.com account, which of course is my personal / business account. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB, not much going on there. Steve Cole got shot up with some iron to hopefully to make it so he's not as tired or dizzy. Basically his low iron numbers were low. And that was the cause of those issues. One thing he reported was the Petra guy did some work on Module K's, and the orders were done by Albert, Gene, and Mike. When it comes to Fallon on the online store for this week, we had F&E countersheet E&F. That's from F&E. Big surprise. And it's only $1.95 for those two sheets. The 216 single-sided counters and markers for all the F&E empires are on those sheets, on the countersheet. Oh, sorry, it's a single countersheet. Forgive me. Moving on and forward, we have, of course, the SFB Online tournaments. We have the Star 19 tournament. We have the round two games are going. Looks like they're all moving forward, which is good to see. And when it comes to the 500 BPV tournament, the next take two of that. Actually, I signed up late. And because I told, Jeff, you know, it looks like that's Justin decided to quit. Well, looks like he also decided to come back. Sorry, that sounds very capricious. It's like, make up your mind. Either you're going to be playing or you're not playing. Just choose one, please. It's like when you see people going down the road and they can't decide which lane they want to go be in, the right lane or the left lane. Like, just pick one. You know, if you want to go slow, that's fine. Yeah, we'll go fast, fine, just pick a lane. So the games are now Mad Men, that's in Lyran, versus Neon Pico, that's Matt, in the Hydrans. So that's, I said that was a good one. Of course, we have the same one with Vandar in the Vudar versus Mighty Mouse, which is in the Klingon. And then Frank LeMay, Princeton, is still going to Gorn with Ed Crutchfield. He's playing the Fed, and they've completed at least one turn. They've started a game. And then Spartan, which is Jeff, has gone face Majid. Jeff is flying in the Romulan, and Majid still hasn't picked the Empire that he wants to fly against. And guess who? I, in my Andromedan, get to fly against Justin in Fed. So it should be interesting to see how it all works out. And actually, there was a point made in the discussion boards, and I'll bring that up later on in the actual episode. When it comes to online client stuff, not much happening there, though I did have a chance to actually implement the Q Random IO dice for the client. So that'll be one of those things that I did for when it comes to the die rollers for the client. Currently, the only person who has that version of the client is, well, me, because I haven't released it yet. I'll be releasing it hopefully, and not this weekend, hopefully next weekend, I will be able to do that. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to Starfleet Warlord, Diner 58 and 59 are going well. I'm going to be working on what the setup for the next standard game will be because it got completed over 2 weeks ago. Not over, over a little bit less than 2 weeks ago. And I want to start up a new standard game because I know some people don't like the diehards, but they do like the standard games. When it comes to library report for this week, I'm sorry, I've not got around to updating the different ships on when it comes to I think I have some general to do, some feds, and I forget there's some I think with some Tholians, which Fred has done. I'm not sure I want to do the feds right now. Because that it goofs to me it gets goofs things up when you have an updated game. And when it comes to the FedCon library, there's nothing no updates there for this week. So that is the news for this week. Me, just the one and only Paul Franz welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we have Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug. How you doing? Yada yada.
And we have Matt. Say hi, Matt.
Hello.
Excellent, excellent. Actually, this one I did not check, and I forgive me if you see this. No, you don't. Okay, awesome. I wasn't sure if I was sharing my screen yet. I've not screen sharing my screen yet. The one thing I need to do because, that's better. I use this product called Loopback, and the problem with it is it has a monitor, and I use that so I can actually not have to record and actually listen and talk to people. And the problem is if I have it during the show, I have both my recording software, which also sends monitoring into my ears, and that one sending monitor into my ears, so I get kind of an echo. Kind of weird, but it works. Okay, there. Whoops. Excuse me. Had to fix my iPad up. Now, anyone who knows, been here long enough, knows that I usually leave an iPad to watch to see what I'm actually sending out to you, to y'all folks, and of course also I had to turn down the sound. But anyway, with that, Doug wanted to talk about gamers, at least had wanted to have a few thoughts about gamers.
Gamers and Women is only 4 months away. And, schedule would be nice. I had a random thing on Facebook that I saw today where someone was talking about something they did as a group, and they asked a question about how do we make the game faster for Starfleet battles. And basically the guy had said that he got a group, a bunch of players back together, and it's been decades plus since they last played. And like I said, sounded like it was a larger group of people, four, five, six people, something like that. I don't know an exact number there, but I posted a thought for him about, trying to do more one-on-one type fights, maybe playing with frigates. And just doing things like that to just brush up on the rules again, since you're all starting over again. And just also just practice makes perfect, so just playing more often will make the game faster as you all get more used to the rules. With that thought in mind, I just had a random thought of, what about doing a captain's tournament slash survivor like thing, where kind of like a tournament but not, where how you have the captain's game and all that, but instead use frigates for it, And basically, last person standing, or the person with the most points at the end of it, you know, is best frigate captain, and make it like a 2-day event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, starting Saturday morning, round robin-y, combination of duels and monster scenarios. Doesn't have to get too involved, but keeping it real simple so that the scenarios, you know, each fight would be kind of sort of short. You know, and you could cap it with like an hour or two limit so that you don't have these massively ballet style fights that might take forever. You know, and just say, okay, you know, if you're not done in 2 hours and you've done a ballet style thing, it's a draw.
Right.
You know, it's something random, kind of just, it was just kind of a random thought. And that extra random thought about doing something at Gamers just kind of popped into my head when we were initially talking right before Matt popped in.
Mm-hmm.
So
is this related to like the patrol game that I've heard so much about done at Origins?
Could be in a similar format. The patrol game at Origins was a round robin thing where you played your little heart out. And then if you got enough net wins, you would go into a tree. And the structure of it was like first day, second day, I think, play as many as you want. And then third day, I think, was a tree. So, but the thing is, it's round robin. It's not like, and the one thing I don't like about that one is that it was net, so your losses counted against you.
Right.
And you're paying to play. So if you're paying to play in something like that, I think your losses should not count as a minus. They should just count as a zero. And people who get the wins, they get, you know, their plus ones until to get a score to say who's got the most wins.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody who shouldn't have to work your way out of a hole. I mean, if you get a win or two, maybe you get a point or two.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody who gets three or four wins is still going to be in a position where they're going to be in that tree later. So
mm-hmm.
It was kind of a random thought, but it was more thinking along the lines of taking a different spin on the captain's game and not necessarily making it as involved as that with all those multiple different types of scenarios, some of which you would probably want to have multiple players on at least one or one side, maybe both. You know, and you could have different things in it. Like you could have like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, noon to three is open play time of fight duels. And everybody gets to fight individual duels in a round robin thing. And then 3 o'clock might be, or 4 o'clock might be, we're going to have a Grand Prix style thing where here's a course laid out on a huge multi-map thing with maybe some wormholes or whatever, you know, different ways of getting around the map and different objectives of like, you know, you get to point A, you get to point Y, you get so many points, and anybody can shoot anybody. So you might end up with fights and duels, and you might end up with maneuver and objectives and just something randomly different, but on a scale of doing it with a few approved frigate fits.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that it's not complicated. It's not, yeah. A lot. One of the things about Starfleet battles, it's an interesting thing that I find, like so many things in life, is that it can be contradictory. Like bring out people who love really complicated stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then make it even more complicated than it was, when trying to keep it simple actually can make it more fun. And I think one of the issues that a lot of people have with the game is we want to do everything all at once because we're only getting to do this at this one point in time for this weekend. And, you know, it's like, it's kind of like looking at the 500 BPV tournament you're talking about, where they, you know, the players all kind of voted to, the majority of them voted to have the ECM rules. And my personal opinion is, for a tournament of any kind, make it as simple as possible. And, you know, taking the ECM stuff out of it is number one in that list of how to simplify the play to keep it within a certain time limit.
Right.
Now, that said, you've got a very slack time to get your 500 BPV online tournaments done because of the nature of how that's done. But at a convention, at a face-to-face event, we've only got so many hours and so many days of being there to get the thing done. So, you know, that was kind of my thought. It's just like, you know, pick a handful of different frigates that across the board of the races, so people have the variety that they can choose from, and take it down to the basic tournament rules, and then modify it slightly. Like, you could have a floating map, and you could use a modified system of the actual victory points, instead of like the I blow you up, I win rules. So like, people would have a reason to engage, but they would also have a reason to like run away and disengage rather than explode. Right. So, and you could also have it so that in each of the fights where ships are, where ship versus ship, it's literally, you know, your points are on the line. You're not playing on the opposite side. You're not playing surprise reverse where, you know, one side is the four gimped ships at weapon status zero, and one guy's coming in to make his points for the scenario, for the campaign. No, you don't have that. You have both players are coming in with their regular ships. If it's a surprise reverse scenario, maybe they're coming in as opposing factions against the third faction, and that faction player in the middle, you know, he plays as a robot player, and the other guys are going to try to get as much blown up out of that, as well as maybe fight each other. You know, something weird like that. Something different. Something that make it a worthwhile convention experience without mission creeping it into a... Did we lose somebody?
Yeah.
What happened?
I don't know.
Did Matt, DC?
Matt,
or?
Matt dropped. I'm not sure why he dropped.
Okay. Well, hopefully he'll come back.
Yeah, Mike.
Come back,
Mike. Before we started, sounds like that he was planning to be here. Yeah.
Okay. So, at any rate, well, I guess we can talk until he comes back, because that's the whole purpose of having the podcast, is to talk.
Yeah.
But no, that's kind of it. It's like making something that's memorable. It's not too specific that people might get so turned off by it. Like, I could see people not wanting to come out and play the Tholian wedding cake. I could see people not wanting to come out and do, like, you know, Operation Cavalry or the Lone Gray Wolf campaign or something like that. But you can also see people coming out to do, like, a bunch of the ones that are specifically set up for tournament play or for convention play. So that was kind of my thought there. Welcome back.
Yep. He's currently
that was the random thought that they had right before we started, and I just wanted to throw that out there. If you wanted to write something up like that, maybe, you know, and then maybe that could be like a different kind of thing, and we could like slap it onto a whole bunch of like Starfleet Battles Facebook threads and say, hey, we're going to do this different thing in this way at this event over the course of 2 days. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're interested in it, come on up.
Right. And obviously, if we wanted to, we could do something like a PF Derby, which is always interesting and always nice in that with PF Derby is that you have a very small ship and people get blown up pretty quickly because of PFs overall are unlike like frigates and cruisers. In my mind, the big thing about PFs is that the amount of firepower that they have is it's at least a little greater than their defensive capabilities.
They're glass cannons.
Right, exactly.
When they're up against each other.
Right, yeah. which makes things go a lot quicker, you know, which was the point, which was if you go from cruisers down to frigates, and if the idea of going from cruisers down to frigates is that you want the game to go faster, that might not be how it goes. This example of which is Federation Commander, the whole idea of squadron versus fleet size. And, oh, the fleet should be, they should get done faster. No, you've decreased the amount of defense, decreased the amount of offense, and so you pretty much have the same length of game.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. It's a difference in scale. Right. But the flip side of it is this. If you do get some damage in, and you're doing it as the BPV, the original victory conditions, and not just a fight to the death, then you have the, well, okay, I turn away and I disengage because I'm not going to give you the extra level of victory of blowing me up.
Right.
You know, and again, you can also have the inherent rule of, hey, look, if you guys go X amount of time, we're going to take a look at the game and then we're going to call it.
Yeah, I think that was what I think Ken Burnside's whole idea of the new Federation Commander format was supposed to be. The only problem was that he left the company before it actually got instituted. So we were trying, I still remember the first time we tried to use it, it would just seem unworkable, you know, until we fell back on the standard blow each other up, you know, as the defined of when it comes to victory conditions. So,
Well, it's like this, there's the victory conditions in like the book for standard scenarios and standard, you know, BPV fights. And then there's the tournament victory condition. One of you explodes. And if neither of you have exploded, then we're going to figure out who would explode first.
Right.
Yeah. So, but in this thought that I had about doing like a, it'd be kind of like a pseudo campaign because you're going to have so many fights in it and you're going to have maybe some additional things. Like you might make, you know, hour X the monster hour. So you end up with some randomly generated monster scenarios. Everybody has to fight this monster. Everybody has to do that monster. You know, and then and 2 hours later might be something else. Now, granted, the concept is something that it would take a bit of a dedicated player base that wants to do that particular thing. But on the other hand, you could throw in enough variety to make it an interesting and convention-y, unique kind of experience. especially if you can get a whole bunch of players involved so that you have like maybe a tree on Sunday afternoon that's derived from all those victory points. And then it becomes, okay, it's, you know, you're going to have a combination of maybe some small group fights, and whoever survives the small group fights, depending on how many players you have, you could say, okay, you know, we could have a bunch of small individual fights into a traditional tree, or you could say, okay, there's only so many of you, so instead of a traditional tree, we're going to have like a, you know, a group fight, and here's how you are advantaged or disadvantaged for the group fight based off your points. Like, if you are severely ahead in the game, maybe you throw them, like, a few legendary officers and some extra hidden captains options for them to play. And if they were, like, severely short, you might say, okay, well, yeah, you're on the penal frigate, buddy, if they're that bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that. Something that makes it memorable and different. And it's like, if everybody sees, oh, that guy's got the legendary crew because he basically had all the points, they might gang up on him. And he's not going to be, you know, Survivor Island in space. And, you know, because you might make that final fight, you might make it into a, say, a multi-map thing, but a closed multi-map thing where people can be hunted down, cornered. You have to deal with different terrains. Like, you could have like a, you know, an asteroid field in as one map, and then attached to that map on each side, you could have like, you know, maybe a nebula on one side, an open space on the other, and some random little planets, you know, maybe a gas giant on one side of it, and just go to town. Mm-hmm. It's like, last ship still existing wins, or you know gets to claim the system for their empire.
Do you think this is something we can do next time we run the 500 point BPB tournament?
Hell no. I mean, yeah, maybe. I mean, sure, anything's possible with that. I'm just throwing some things against the wall to see what might stick there. Because, I mean, you know, and I'm trying not to mission creep it, but I want to have it as something where it could be, you know, different, memorable, and simple to run. So.
I like the idea of adding terrain to something like that, to a free-for-all. It kind of mixes it up, makes it memorable. I agree.
And the other side of it is, not just one terrain type, but like, yeah, for instance, if you have like the random monster time could also be random terrain time, you know, but everybody has to do the same thing. So nobody's particularly disadvantaged and gets, you know, hosed because they got the hard one and everybody else got the easy one.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in that final fight thing, you would have like a good chunk of differences in space to run around through. Some people might find it advantageous to run through the asteroid field and fight, you know, especially if you're fighting against plasma or some, you know, you want to give somebody else a simple ECM shift without having the full-blown ECM in the game. You know, you could say, okay, for every hex you're shooting through, you're getting the ECM negatives of shooting through an asteroid field, if there is one, or you could make one up. You know, you could have the thing about, like, oh, if you have your shields down and you're over in the nebula, you're going to start losing crew units. You know, things like that. Random thought, something very different that would be like outside of the scope of your normal weekend home game.
Right.
And maybe in the lines of a club thing.
It sounds like a tournament scenario that was in the where you had a bunch of ships trying to go through a race, and then every some odd hexes there was a new terrain type.
Yeah, I know you're talking about. Is it related to Black Hole Mania?
Is it Death Race 3000?
No, there is one. Yeah, Death Race 3000, which you went around the board in a circle. A racetrack formation, which was interesting. It was as part of module T. They had the scenario listed in the module T that people could play at conventions, which was very interesting. Also, they had I remember actually playing one Black Hole Mania at Origins in Columbus. You know, it definitely was Columbus. I forget which year it was, but Ken Burnside was there, and having the Black Hole show up, and for us, the thing is we didn't have, what we did was we had three maps, and it was in the shape of a T, and you had to stay on the map, you know the tournament barriers and all that kind of thing. But so we had two maps this way, side by side, and then you had the one straight up, and we were playing on Black Hole Mania with that, which made the main thing is a little bit interesting just because of the map configuration itself, So
we should see about doing that kind of map situation in Starfleet Online.
Not sure you can do something.
Do some scenarios around.
That would be, in theory, you could do that with basically making a very large square board, and then say, okay, these two areas here and here, those are off limits, and maybe create like a map that people would load up. I upload it to the library so that they can, that could be assigned to the groom, and then those two areas would be blocked out for the map. So that'd be the interesting map. To me, I would love to have a more than two player game going. I would love to try that on SFB Online. The tough part, obviously, is always scheduling. That's always the biggest issue in the entire world. And that's why usually things like that, things like the PF Derby or Demolition Derby or Black Hole Mania, those things are best played in person, because of, especially for conventions where you're already there, so you already have dedicated the time. You just decide, okay, the time at the convention I'm going to spend for this few hours or whatever, 3 or 4 hours, I'm going to play this one game, at that location. And someone says, well, no one wants to play one game for 3 or 4 hours. Like, yeah, that's baloney. Starfleet Ballast is one of them. There's multiple F&E kind of strategic games which you can easily play for more than 3 or 4 hours. It's just, I've played in some of those games.
If you're going to play F&E at a convention, you're basically going to do one of two things. Very short scenario, generally speaking.
Or very long.
Or you're doing it for the whole convention for one freaking game.
Yep. And that's what people have done at the Origins. So that it was quite interesting in that.
But that's also why they go there.
Right. Oh, that's, I agreed. That's why they went there. And don't go. Please don't get me started on Origins.
We can avoid that.
We've had this discussion multiple times in the past, and I don't want to just regurgitate the same issue when it comes to
moving on.
It was
skipping Origins.
Moving on. Unlike everybody else, I'm actually going to show you what my fleet is. So if Justin seems to be happen just to come by and watch the YouTube video, fine, have fun. Do I care? No, I really don't.
I think you do.
Because of it's an Andromeda fleet, which means, what does that mean? That means that there's no shuttles, there's no wild weasels, there's no seeking weapons. It's an Andromeda fleet. Makes things a little more interesting. Got those nice little dizzy devs. Yee-hee! Let's have fun. So,
aren't your satellite ships the actual seeking weapons?
We can consider them that way, yeah.
Only if they're Cobras.
Oh, my dear friend, You show. Okay. Number one, the big dog in my fleet is an Andromedan Imposer. For those of you who don't know what an Imposer is, it's basically, it's a mothership which can carry one satellite ship. So that's one. But in replace of those wonderful hangars, what it did is it added more TR beams. So instead of having three TR beams, it has five TR beams. And these are TR heavies. So they will so they will do a nice job on you if they get a little bit close. You got 32 and 44 total power, and it's got, of course, the 8 batteries, and needs every single point of battery that it can do. It can have, one repair and one hangar. Big surprise. And as mentioned, only one satellite ship. Next one.
Now,
yes.
With your PA panels and your TRs and your distabs and everything, you've got a cruising speed of about 15 in that thing, don't you?
Okay, it can go pretty swiftly. I'd have to double. Okay, PA cost is 6 and 10, so it can fly around with PA panels at 6, and of course it's 4. Sorry, not 4. It's 2. Yeah, 2. So you have life support and fire control, and 10 and 6 points for 8. So a total of 8 for just keeping things up and running. Out of 40, these devs are one apiece. That's 2 points of power there. 3 points of power for each of the TRs. That's going to be 15. So we got 15 plus 8 is 23. So 24. So yeah, it's around 16. If I don't burn any batteries.
Okay.
So that's the bad part.
So you're going to be going slow.
Right.
So you're going to be slower than the other fleet.
Correct. Obviously, depends on how much do I use of the battery. I can actually increase my speed and just run from battery. The question is, how much will I use?
Right.
Now, big surprise, when all said and done, chose an eel. Okay, so let's make sure I get my where's it? Okay, there's right. Eel is my scout, which has 4 special sensors, and it's got 24 power. I got that right? Nine, 18. It's actually 20 power. 20?
Yeah.
Yeah, 20 power with 20 batteries. So overall, it's got a good amount of power to run around. The ultimate question, obviously, it should be able to run around and actually use at least two of the special sensors without issue, and actually use 2 other special sensors for other things, like using them specifically for breaking drone lock on. And that, cause that's relatively cheap versus EW. Obviously one thing I can do, and I, as I mentioned before, which is in theory, I could actually drag this using the, Imposer. I think that'd be kind of crazy, cause that's 1.5. It would be better to do it if I was using the Courier, cause that's only 1/3. So a lot easier, but you know, so this one should be able to fly around at a decent speed because it's only 50%, you know, 1/2 power. Sorry, million cost of 1/2. Forgive me. PA count cost is 4, so that'd be a total of 6 for standards. It doesn't have any TR beams, so it doesn't have to worry about firing them. So it can put the rest of
If it's just doing housekeeping, you know, the PAs, and just keeping all 4 sensors hot, but not really putting any other power into them, got a cruising speed of about 26.
Yep. Which is what I want. I want something that can move at least like 15 and keep its distance, basically, is the whole idea. Don't want to get too close, because obviously, even with 40 panels, it, you know, 4 in the front, 3 in the back, it could easily be flapped. But of course, it's an Andromedan, so it can drain things out of it, do some toggling and so forth, you know. And fortunately, with special sensors, it doesn't have to be facing the opponent, so that's good. The next ship is the Cobra. Big surprise, standard Cobra with 2 TRLs, and of course, again, same amount of power, which is a total of 20, and the battery is also a total of 20. So it's not going to go nearly as fast when it comes to just holding costs. So, you know, the standard running cost, which is going to be 6 + 4, so it's 10. So it can move at like a speed 20. Throughout, because it's 50%, it's a 1/2 movement cost, so it can move around speed 20, which is not bad. Obviously, it can go faster if it needs to, because we do have batteries, and we have plenty of batteries. But obviously, the whole issue with Andromedans and batteries is that if you keep on using those beautiful batteries, use up all that energy in those beautiful batteries, sooner or later, you think you start going slower and slower and slower, and it gets bad, because I've actually had it so I ran out of energy in my batteries, and to say the very least,
you just cut out.
I cut out.
You cut out.
I was able to hear you the whole time.
Okay, so cool, great. That means it's just Doug.
I see with the Imposer going 15 without batteries, the Cobra going 20 without batteries, and your Eel going 26 without batteries. The way I would expect you to fly around, your Imposer being so slow, I would expect your opponent to dip into range 8, maybe, if they were feeling lucky, but otherwise keeping you at distance and just pecking away at you, probably at the Cobra first.
Right. I'd be surprised it wouldn't go after the Scout first, but...
Well, the Scout, I would expect you to hang way, way back, and it's got right. The speed that it can do that.
Right.
So probably your Cobra would die fairly easily and fairly quickly. And unless you used batteries for a very quick and very concerted speed burst, I would expect that you would not land very many hits on someone who wanted to, say, keep an average speed of 21.
Yep. And obviously, the biggest issue is going to be drones. And especially because my first opponent is a Fed, which means it's going to have drones. I have to double check last game whether a lot of those drones were speed 20 or... Yeah. No, actually, I think they were all speed 32, which was...
can assume that all of the drones will be speed 32.
Yeah, which always sucks when it comes to the Andromedans.
So the Andromedans generally spend lots of time putting out T-bombs, and you might want to empty your Cobra first. But your disc dev, I would expect you to use offensively. Since you find it hard to get close to the other guy, you might want to use a disc dev to bring one of them close to you. And then you just, you know, pile drive him with your TRHs and hopefully just kind of whittle him down faster than he's whittling you down.
Yep, yep. Definitely, that's one thing I plan on doing, which is using the disc devs to break up his fleet. That's gonna be the main use of the disc devs. At least that's the plan. So the idea is separate one, go for attack possibly one of the smaller ships so I can easily just blast it, knock it out, and move on, or possibly one of the larger ships and bring it closer to the Imposer firing, you know, all five TR heavies at around like range 5. And if I get lucky, that's 100 points of damage right there. Because 4 to 5 is when you actually get, for the roll of 1, you get hits for 20 points of damage. So.
Yes.
So.
Yes, at range 1. Yeah, your average damage is at range 5. Let's see here, is somewhere around 16 or 18 points per TR. So yeah, you're looking at about 80 points of damage just on TRs.
Right.
At 5. Now, I think you're going to have a problem getting to range 5. I think they are probably going to want to fight at longer ranges, so actually end up having to take a range 8 shot.
Well, that's the whole reason for the dizzy dev. If I can pull one ship, which is close, you know, possibly if I'm really lucky, move them 6 hexes towards me, I can get within range 5 of him, while the rest of his fleet might be at range 11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, part of that is going to be my own. It's going to be luck, you know. And I understand that. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know what you're referring to.
Yeah, I got it. Mm-hmm.
And it's just a reminder for all those. It's going to be interesting because I developed the client, therefore I get all the new goodies before anyone else gets those goodies. And one of those goodies, of course, you consider it a goodie. I'm not sure I consider it a goodie, which is basically updated random number generators. Now.
Yeah.
I can easily see Justin complaining about that, but it's random numbers.
And yet he took a Fed and he's going to complain about his dice luck.
Yeah, I know.
Let's not go there.
Yeah.
So to divert you away from this thing about the random numbers, can the Andromedan take small support units like a pseudo satellite ship or the decoy SSU or even a displacement beacon? Is that part of the force BPV, or can you take that as commander's options?
No, that'd be part of the force. Which reminds me of the last ship, the Andromedan Mobile Recovery Platform. Now, this one, I've got to read up a little bit because this one has shock. As defined by rule number D23.
Is it a mauler?
No, it has 2 TRLs. That's it. That's 2 TRLs, 2 PA panels, and
it's just a gun platform.
It's basically a gun platform. It's meant as recovery, as use it as a tractor beam to grab other MWPs and bring them back to the base. And I picked it up, and I went, I'm going to play this one. Movement cost.
It's like their version of a PF.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yep. Yes. It substituted
Dude, you should just make a fleet of those with one mothership and a scout.
I suggested a fleet of like 12 of those.
Yeah.
With the mobile operation sled.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yes.
I agree. It would be awesome. However, they got a top speed of like 15. So the other guy is going to be able to pick you apart. You know, they don't, if they do 25 points into it, then they kill it.
Yeah.
And so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I assume it will die. It's target practice.
They'll be popcorned mm-hmm. to death.
That's why I'm not too concerned about the shock. I don't expect
the important thing is that it's like a Mauler. It's a target. It's something that they spend their weapons on, so they're not shooting at something important.
Bingo.
So I see the reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to have to keep that one in the hangar until you get close to the other guy, because there's no way it's going to keep up.
Well, that's also the plan, which is to have it so it's actually in the hangar of the Imposer, and because it can't go that fast as it stands. And even when you actually transport out of the ship, which I have to figure out what the transport costs would be for this, transport out a satellite ship. And, it takes, I think it's 4 impulses. I got checked whether it's 4 or 8 for it to gain it. But also it's limited to speed 10 during that time. And this maxes out at like speed 15. So, okay, what's the big difference? You know?
Right.
So definitely it'd be perfect for that pop out, because in theory, the transportation cost for this should be very small, because
I think it's a point of power, I think. So yeah, you're right.
Yeah, da, 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 da. This one.
I think that it's a very neat idea, very clever, but I think you might be better off getting like a decoy SSU. Or perhaps even a displacement beacon. Both of them would be used defensively in case something goes sideways.
Yeah, I disagree with that a little bit. The one thing that I was thinking about a little bit, and I'd like to have more firepower, which is possibly an E-module. That's...
Yeah.
That was an idea. And there, sell it up.
Yeah, that could help.
Okay, yeah, because the small ones are 3 points. That's for the Viper size. This is before the MWPs. Actually, do they have? Okay, MWP. And this is the power absorbers. So there. Okay. Ba, ba, ba. I just want to see if it's deployed or deployed by transports, or it can be displaced. All right. But it doesn't say. Whatever. I might have to email someone about this.
You want G35.21. Transporting an SSU launch recovery costs 1 point of energy, and MWPs are considered an SSU.
Oh, there it is. Okay. Yeah, it costs 1 point. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. So yeah, would you like to talk about what your general tactics with this fleet would be?
Yes.
Or do you think that's secret information?
No, I don't think that secret information overall, because of Obviously, so
how would this fleet fly by the book?
By the book?
By the book. Against random opponent.
Random component. The key thing here is because of I chose to grab the imposer. That means as by the book, by if you bring up the if you buy the Starfleet Battles Tactics Manual, there are two ways of flying the Andromedans. Number one is what's called the pop-up or pop-out maneuver, which is you have all your satellite ships within your mothership, and then the mothership then goes pop, and all the you put them all in front of your mothership, you transport them all out, and then you know they get ready for get their you know active fire control all going, and then they attack the fleet in front of them. That's one way of doing it. The other is called the fast fleet maneuver, or fast flying the fast fleet, which is having all the ships already on the board and have them fly around at a high rate of speed. And which obviously, given plasma torpedoes and speed 32 drones, that's kind of a requirement here because of in if anyone's watching had not noticed, I'm just gonna bring up the Cobra here. Cobra has all of four phaser twos, not phaser ones, phaser twos. The issue with the phaser twos is that there are no automatic kills. Unlike phaser ones, which at least range one, I think it's range one. I'm not sure, it might be out the range two. I don't have the chart memorized. You can actually knock out drones quite easily with phaser ones.
Phaser twos can operate like phaser threes, but with plus two range. You think of the chart like that. So where at a phaser one, I'm sorry, a phaser three at range one on a five or a six will not kill a drone. A phaser two at range three on a four, five or six will not kill a drone. At range two, a five and a six won't kill a drone. So yeah, the same problem with no automatic kills, but you can add plus two to the range. And so that lets you shoot them up before they get to you so you can maneuver appropriately.
Right. Right. That is good. Where is it? It should be here. I don't see it. Okay. Phasers are limited, i.e., you need to keep your speed up to keep them at a relatively safe distance. And obviously, it's going to be like anything else. Like anytime anyone uses T-bombs for protecting itself against drones, is that you want to gather them up into a nice clump if possible. And that's standard practice. Obviously, the one benefit of being an Andromedan is that overall that T-bombs can be used without actually dropping the PA panels on like galactic ships, which have to drop their shields to transport out mines. Obviously, if they want to, they can drop the mines, but that also requires them running away. And then hopefully you can guide the drones so they actually will run over the T-bombs versus the transporter, which you actually are able to lay them and have a greater possibility of placing it so that the drones will die. The important thing, obviously, is practice on where to lay those, because some people aren't that good at laying down T-bombs. Let's put it that way. So overall, that's the overall general tactics when it comes to Andromedans, which is keep the speed up, use T-bombs for drones, and keep up the speed.
So, as we already noted, the Imposer has a fairly low cruising speed. Would you plan on using batteries to keep that up when you're near the enemy?
Yes. I definitely would.
Okay.
So that, therefore, hopefully, I would get a possible tactical advantage of speed over my enemy.
Well, having so much battery power, you would have a tactical advantage of speed plus EW over your opponent, because you have your scout that can fairly cheaply loan to your Imposer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see you spending a lot of time with the EL trying to loan to your Cobra, because your Cobra is not terribly important to your fleet.
Correct.
So that is actually kind of a net benefit, because you're only protecting one ship with your scout.
Yep.
And
hopefully that I will be able to at least inflict damage, knock down shields. Hopefully, if I'm really fortunate, knock out a ship before my Cobra is gone. It's completely toast. I expect the MTP to die really a glorious death on the first time I put him out.
Yeah, probably that might be the first one, because as I said, it only takes about 25 points to kill it, maybe 30.
Yep.
And then your Cobra will be next. It will probably come away damaged from the first combat run.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the real question is going to be, because I will be facing Feds, of course, is there's the one when it comes to just a Fed fight, overall, like any other a Fed fight, which is of course how do the Feds use their their photon torpedoes.
Well, I don't expect them to proximity fuse against an Andromedan. So they're probably going to go overload and punish you if you go for a range 8 shot.
Mm-hmm. Well,
we can assume they've got a scout. They yep. might force a neutral EW environment, in which case, if they're sporting, say, 12 photons, that would be 3 ships, we could expect 6 of them to hit full overloads. That's going to be, 72 points of damage?
Yep.
And then phaser one's on top of that. So I could see them getting through your front panels of your Imposer.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely possible. And that's, in that case, the question is, will they wait?
Because as a Fed, I would wait, because I would expect you to try to go for a range 5 shot.
Mm-hmm. And not just that, also remember the one thing, which is of course that when it comes to the Andromedans, obviously at some point we have to turn
and show your rear.
Yep. Yeah.
Although you're not likely to do that until you've already destroyed a ship.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. That is true.
So let's move on to some of the other fleets, if you don't mind.
Yes, I would love to move on to some of the other fleets.
Okay. Well, I've seen a couple of the battles already. I'm participating with a Hydran fleet that's Hellbore-centric. I'm fighting up against a Lyran fleet that is large ship-centric. I've seen the Klingon fleet is centered on D5s, the warcruiser.
Right.
And the Vudar fleet is kind of a Well, I've talked to the player. He thought we were still playing under the previous rules of that you had to have a size class 4 ship. So he's got a couple of size class 4 ships and a couple of size class 3 ships.
Okay. Kind of like kind of like my, what I played last time. This is what I did. Two size class 3, two size class 4.
Yes. Very much like that. So, I'll talk about mine since it's kind of fresh in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I took a couple of it was a pair of Iroquois, which are Hellbore variants of their NCA. And I took an IRC, which is a Hellbore version of their new command cruiser. The IRC is basically an IRQ, an Iroquois, where they replaced a couple of phasers with fusions, largely. So they all fly the same. And as a result, I've got 12 Hellbores. I have no scout. And I got a cruising speed of about 24, if I recall correctly. Might be 21. No, it's 21. I'm sorry.
Did you take any fighters?
So each one has a pair of Stingers, and they all have warp booster packs. So, yeah, the standard procedure I was planning on doing with this fleet was put out the fighters with a pair of EW pods. And so they've got a max speed of 28. My ship's coming up behind them with a speed of about 21. And cruise into range 15 to the opponent. Have my fighters cruise into range 10. Have the fighters do a range 10 alpha strike, which with the EW pods, I can pick a target, preferably one with a neutral EW shift, and blast away. I'll do an average of 28 points of damage with those 6 fighters. And then same impulse, or shortly thereafter, 12 Hellbores at range 15. I'll do an average of 7 of them. 7 of them will hit in a neutral EW environment. So that'll be another 35 points of damage on whatever shield those fighters hit. And then everything turns around and runs away and reloads. So I expect that the opposing fleet will probably bear in and try to pin me up against the wall. And about the time that happens, I've got my Hellbores back. So he's probably going to lose a ship. I might lose a ship. And he'll have another cripple probably out of that. And then we just rinse and repeat. I was planning on basically doing a saber dance. Just play it like like the Klingons would. Do a range 15 shot, turn away. Range 15 shot, turn away.
Mm-hmm. Question.
And then, of course, because they're Hydrans, everyone's afraid of getting close, which is reasonable because I sport a couple of Gatlings on each of those. If he does get close, then he's taking a lot more damage from the Hellbores, and then there's the Gatlings that'll help.
Right.
So, yes, question.
And then, of course, the fighters, if they get close, they have their fusions. Then those packs can produce quite a bit of damage. Now, one question.
Yes.
Has he used his ESGs yet?
The Liren, yes, he's been using ESGs. In our fight, I've been fighting the Liren. I was able to get a range 15 shot, and then we kind of mixed it up a little bit. He's done a lot of shield damage and a few internals on one of my Iroquois. It's nearly crippled. He's been trying to use ESGs defensively, and the one time that it mattered, I ended up crashing those with all of my admin shuttles, all of my fighters, and all of my ships at the same time.
Oh, geez.
So I was able to spread it out. I was able to spread it out quite a bit.
Right.
And then took a shot, and he's got a dead cruiser at the moment, and I've got a nearly crippled NCA.
Wow.
Presently, where we are when we stopped, we're about turn 3. I think we're coming into turn 4. I'm 5 hexes off his rear end. He's running away. He's got a couple of ESGs up defensively because my Hellbores come back online. I have no more fighters. And we're at the point now to where either he's going to start castle and try to send some more overloads and kill a ship. But if he does that, he's going to be, he may end up taking some Hellbores. Or he keeps flying away and goes for speed, and then I try to chase him. I expect him to run away with ESGs up, trying to soak up my Hellbores. And so I plan on just following him until I can get a good shot.
Mm-hmm. So did either of you have any scouts?
No, I took no scout.
And he, Lirin?
The Lirin did not take a scout. The Lirin has a battle tug, a BC, and a cruiser.
Wow.
So he's got a total of 16 disruptors, but because 8 of them are on the battle tug. But right. If the battle tug tries to do overloads with those, he's not moving hardly at all. So he gives up the initiative by doing that. Right. So what he's been doing is a lot of standards. And I think he was actually planning on doing something like a saber dance. But he actually tried to do some overloads too. He was trying to chase me around. He didn't expect me to take a range 15 shot and run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's been doing a fair amount of overloads. I think he was planning on playing like a Klingon.
Understood. Yeah, because definitely interesting. Interesting. Yeah, because I would have, especially after the first time you fired a range 15. Well, what I would do as a Lirin is I'll, at the very least try this maneuver, which is using the ESG as basically high Hellbore shields. You know,
he's presently trying to do that. He didn't have them up when I did my range 15 shot, probably because he didn't expect me to do that.
Right, right. I'm saying after the first time, which is, it shows your, obviously you're more to what your plan was, your strategy for the scenario. First, you know, on the first time, I can understand not having them up.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what he's doing.
Especially when you have, you know, all those fighters. I know there are not a lot of fighters, but there's some. Where you want the fighters and to get close in, you know.
Yeah, I expect him to continue to use the ESGs defensively against the Hydrans. He'll probably do the same against Klingons, but against anyone else, he'd probably use them offensively. And go for the ram.
Right. Right. So,
the way his fleet is set up, he's with the battle tug, he's got a lot of firepower, but he doesn't have a lot of actual power to run it. The BC, however, flips that. He doesn't have much firepower, but he's got tons and tons of power. So he's got an interesting mix of something that can't move but shoot a lot, and something that shoot okay but can't but moves like a bat. So I'm not really sure what dynamic he was planning on going with that.
Understood. But my guess is that he saw all the wonderful disruptors and like, oh, I'm gonna kill him, I'm gonna destroy them, and then think about, can I fire all these?
Yeah. This is the first battle, so I can't say what his general tactic would have been, but I think he was planning on me getting close, so he was planning on doing lots of overloads.
Right.
Which means basically sitting around slowly and letting me come to him. Right. Which is reasonable. On the face of it, that's what you have to do against the Hydran, and the Hydran has to do it against you, is to run up to you. And unfortunately, with the fusion fleets, that's more appropriate. But with the Hellbore fleets, you have a lot more options.
Right. Agreed.
So he's getting practice about how he would fly against Federation. Because I kind of consider a Hellbore kind of like a photon.
Mm-hmm.
With some minor differences.
Agreed. We got...
And then there's the Klingon fleet, which is I think it's like three D5s and also a D5 scout.
Right.
And that one is a pretty nasty fleet because the D5s are already a pretty nasty ship.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Quite nice war cruisers. Still remember when they first came out. It's like, whoa, these are, especially given that they've got around the same firepower as a D7, it has better disruptor arcs than the D7, because it's like there's a front half plus L and front half plus R for the disruptors, you know?
Yes, that right there is a good reason to take them.
Yeah, which I always enjoyed.
So he's got a moderate to heavy drone launch capability. I say moderate to heavy compared to everybody else. It's not up to Gazinti standards, but it's certainly at least as well as you'd see on the feds. And he's got lots of disruptors, and he's got a scout. So I would expect him to do lots of saber dancing and maybe even dip into overload range and try to mix it up there. He's probably got the K refit on everything. That means extra phaser ones instead of phaser twos. So he could be pretty dangerous at overload range.
Understood.
So it's pop out the drones and maybe even some scatter packs and then follow in the drones, go to range 8 and try to blast away with 12 or, yeah, I think it's 12 disruptors. And then turn off and hope they don't shoot you too hard on the way out.
Yeah, I think Justin was watching the game because I'd say this post in the discussion board and type, how can anyone explain how the force of the D5C more crazily at D5L plus two D5Ks and a D5S with speed 32 drones is 500 BPV. And then basically they found out that the refits are being paid with the commander's options.
Yes, I actually found that out when we were setting up with the Lirans, because the Liran player had done the same thing. If you recall, Lirans traditionally get lots of refits. There's the UIM refit, there's mm-hmm. the phaser refit, there's the power pack refit. And he took three fairly beefy large ships. And the only reason he was able to do that was he put the refits in his commander's options. So,
what's the I forgot what's the yeah. limit on the commander's options? Is that 20% or?
It is 20%.
Okay. Wow. That's
so, yeah. People may complain about that. I can cite a rule where I believe those refits are actually supposed to be part of the force, BPV.
Yeah, I saw because that.
If you take a look at the commander's option annexes, which is annex number 6, you've got 6A and 6B. Let's see, I'm looking it up just to make sure. You got annex number 6, which is commander's options, and then a note on annex 6A, which is other optional items available. And that's where you find refits. And at the header for that, it says the costs in this section don't increase BPV of the ship unit, but do count within the overall force total. These items are not commander's options, but units that can be purchased in patrol scenario formats. So based on that, and that's really the only rule on it, I think, those, I don't think those should be part of the 20%. I think those should be part of the 500. But, you know, it does say that it's not part of the BPV of the ship or unit. So, you know, people can argue the other direction.
Understood. Yeah, Frank was mentioning when it comes to drone speed costs, like S3.2.11 does not allow to pay for drone speed upgrades using COs, as I understand, at least that's what Frank says. But S3.2.21 says drone speed upgrades are paid for separately. Yay.
Right. Yes, drone speed upgrades are not part of COs. They're actually part of the force total.
Right.
But if you're buying extra drones that happen to have a speed upgrade on them, then all of that comes out of your CO count.
Yeah, Jessica was mentioning S3.24, which is refits, which are available in the year of the scenario, but not specified for the ships, may be purchased as commander's option in a fixed, i.e. historical or historical scenario. Yeah. Yeah, that mentioned that last bit was put in as a qualifier, and basically saying the refits actually should be part of the actual BPV costs for the ships and not part of the COs. So,
yeah, they were probably done as commander's options, as noted in S3.24. If you wanted to include them to modify a published scenario,
right?
Which this is not a published scenario,
right?
So.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah. But,
well, anyway, that ship has sailed. We'll right. say something probably after the round. But other than that, it is what it is. And my attitude is that if I get beat up because of this, then, you know, everyone else is going to get beat up because of it also.
Oh, agreed.
So, you know, it's an equalizer.
Agreed. Unfortunately, the Andromedas don't have refits. So.
Yeah. And neither do the Vudar, and really neither do the Hydrans. I'm flying modern ships, so there is no refits on them.
Yeah, agreed, agreed. But I said those are more of the newer ships that came out. Yeah, which didn't need refit. Okay, well actually right. with that we're gonna need to wrap it up for this evening. Matt, it's been a wonderful time to have you around until we could discuss ships and tactics. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Well, thank you, Paul. Thank you, Paul.
You have a good night.
And you take care. Take care, Doug.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Doug, it's always nice to have you around. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me on. Let me know if you want to pop up Saturday.
Okay. Well,
contact me through Facebook, though.
Yeah, understood. The plan is that I will be coming probably in early afternoon.
Okay.
Because I still have to do the running around town of do some grocery shopping here and there and so forth and other things I need to get done during Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally got it. Okay.
So,
call me on the phone when you're on your way and. If that changes at all, just let me know through Facebook.
Will do.
Thanks. Have a good night, Paul.
Okay, you too. Okay. So, had a nice discussion there, some ideas for Gamers of Winter. And, of course, my wonderful fleet, which will probably get... It's going to be interesting to see how it goes. Because, as I said, in previous episodes, it's been a while since I've actually... flown an Andromedan fleet. I've flown the Andromedan in tournament, which is a different beast altogether. Well, kind of a different beast. You know, one ship against one ship. You know, you don't have to worry about EW. But of course, the issue with having a fleet is that when it comes to batteries and managing power and all that kind of thing, they actually. Lego SFB. That'd be interesting. That's now I have to manage instead of one ship, its energy, I have to do it for multiple ships, which is always makes things interesting. So I'll be constantly, as if I hadn't already done this, which is I'm constantly checking my energy and where's battery, how to get stuff out of the PA panels into the batteries, and What do I need to do? So anyway, with that, I know Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night. Ugh.